Welcome to the People First Leaders podcast. My name is Doug Utberg, Marine Corps veteran, and I have absolutely nothing to sell you. The purpose of this commercial-free show is to honor the leaders who approach life as go-givers by putting their people and customer value first. Stick around until the end of the show, and we'll reveal how you can be our next guest in about 20 minutes. Let's go. All right, we have Scott Beebe with us today, and we are going to be talking about eliminating chaos in your business. So Scott, before I give you a chance to introduce yourself, tell us about some of the things that create chaos in people's businesses.
I think part of it is just being born into the world that we live and have always lived in. I don't think this is anything new. I know a lot of times in modern society, we usually tend to think that sort of either the chaos we feel, the joy we feel, anything that we feel is either a first time or it's a new thing. We've been told for years and centuries and millennia that there's nothing new under the sun. There's a great proverb around that. Yeah. And so the reality is chaos has always been with us. And as far as I know, chaos will always be with us. And the nice thing about it is we can name it and it's become a shared enemy that we can go after and try to fight. So we never eliminate chaos. It never goes away. But what we can do is begin to keep it at bay and liberate ourselves from it instead of constantly putting out fires all day long, spinning 17 plates, throwing Hail Marys and doing all that. We can actually start to do some things that will keep the chaos at bay and ultimately make time for the things that we want to do.
Got it. Okay, well, so let's talk about some of those things that you can do to keep chaos at bay, because there's a part of me that's like, well, okay. Total chaos is obviously not good. But on the other hand, if you exert too much of a need for control, then it's very easy to stifle your organization. So I think it's, where do you find that balance?
It's interesting you ask that question, because I am a guy that naturally will try to subscribe to, hey, if you can just get your work done, we're great, and move on sort of thing. Yeah. And I realize that that is not leadership. That's abdication. At best, even if you've got a solid vision in place, and I'll talk about that in just a minute. Mm-hmm. But the flip side of that, I've also realized that a lot of the process that we have in our business and that we push our clients, we work with 89 businesses around the country here in the U.S., and we push all of those clients to think about what are those things that you want to control but can't, or shouldn't, I should say. You shouldn't control. To your point, you'll begin to stifle the culture. And yet you need to be able to guide at the same time and go, hey, that's a pet peeve, or this is a blind spot, or whatever. And so one of the things that we have found is we get asked all the time around this idea of employees, generational workforce, because the owners we work with, we ask them, what's your number one headache? And they'll usually say, well, nobody wants to work anymore. So they'll come up with these phrases. By the way, we did a research on that phrase, nobody wants to work anymore. We found articles dating back to 1894. Either headlined with or within the article that nobody wants to work anymore. So again, we're not special snowflakes. It's all the same stuff over and over and over again. But if we can begin to identify those things that frustrate us, irritate us, or create roadblocks and inefficiencies, we can then go to work to start to build process and culture. And I also want to be very articulate about that. We don't hope for culture. We build culture. There is a proactivity to this idea of building culture that needs to be very, very intentional. Because when we just sort of hope for the best and cross our fingers, chaos loves that. That is a breeding ground of perfect soil for chaos to bloom.
Well, and because when I think about culture, I'm going to challenge that idea a little bit. All right. Because I think that culture is something you do have to try to build intentionally, but it doesn't happen the way most people think it does. Because a lot of people think, okay, I put stuff on the posters, and what I tell people our culture is about, that's what it's about. And I disagree with that idea. Yeah. I think that the culture of a company is like when everything's going to hell in a handbasket and people have to act on their own, that's your culture.
Mm. So that's the way you're describing. And the front part of that, totally agree. Back part of it, totally agree. What I'm talking about is in the middle. So you don't get to decide your culture, but you certainly influence what goes into your culture.
Correct.
And so the idea around culture, this is really interesting after you start looking at it. Culture is actually not a business term. We stole it from science. So culture is very much a science. You know, you go back to sixth grade science, you got the petri dish in sixth grade science. And of course, if you were, you know, if you're a guy, you probably spit in it, put it under a microscope, see what's swimming around in there. Pretty disgusting. But if you look at the petri dish, what do you do in a petri dish? You culture things. And the idea is, well, what gets cultured? Whatever you put in, because it's all going to be subject to the same thing: heat, light, moisture, time. Well, in business, it's the same way. It's all subject to that. And so we'll tell people all the time, culture is not beanbag chairs and ping pong tables, soda fountains in the break room, lunch on Fridays, unicorn rides, you know, on the weekend. And that's not culture. Culture are the ingredients that you intentionally put in, begin to bake in proactively. And it actually sounds not very similar to what most people think. So great culture are things like weekly, repetitive, agenda-driven, leader-led team meetings that are 1 hour long with high action items front to back, right? That's an idea that builds culture so that you can look 3 and 5 years downstream and go, wow, that's a great culture, to your point.
I'm down with that. Let me ask, the way that you laid out the meetings, it almost sounds like there's an entrepreneur operating system influence at play here. Maybe not. Maybe I've just talked to too many EOS people in my day,
Yeah, you have. No, it's funny you mentioned that. When we started Business on Purpose back in 2015, the only thing in the space we knew anything about was E-Myth, and Michael Gerber's foundational book, which if nobody's read that, you got to go back and read that if you're anywhere close to sniffing business. And so we started over the next few years. I read that book probably 20 years ago, and it so influenced me. Started working with business owners and realized that the book had some sort of next step methodology behind it, but it was really more storytelling as to the reality of the awareness of what a business owner is dealing with. So in 2015, we went to work to start to build that. And then, I don't know, a couple, 3 years in, we start, hey, have you ever heard of this and that? And they're like, oh yeah, work the system. You know, I mean, there's all sorts of different ones. And so we're in that sphere. That's very much what we do. We work along three major stages, what we call base camp, first mountain, second mountain. It's a longevity experience, but we are a very high touch coaching model. So we're not very distributive, meaning we're trying to do a lot of group stuff, or we do group stuff, but that is not our primary model for that. But yes, we've got all the tools, proprietary and the like, to be able to do that.
Well, I'm going to go on a little bit of a tangent here too, because like there's always been something, I've always had a little bit of a kind of a burr in the back of my shoe about E-Myth, and I think I finally figured out why.
All
It's
right.
because I think the whole idea of process systems, no problem with all of that. However, anything that can be distilled down to a repeatable process will necessarily put you in a highly competitive situation. It's only a matter of time. Competition's going to find you. Economic profits get ground down to zero. So in other words, whatever average profitability is, that's the best you're going to do. So what that means is that if you want to try to forge into a new frontier, whether that's a new idea that hasn't been executed before, some sort of new different that doesn't currently exist, that is going to be a monster of chaos, and E-Myth doesn't apply in any way.
maybe I to take your example, here's what we've always found is that let's talk about the commodification of all things. So we work a lot, about 81% of the businesses we work with are in the construction, infrastructure, architecture, engineering space. And so you could drive down the road in any Main Street USA and look and go, wow, this is beautiful. I mean, this is gorgeous, some beautiful buildings and all that stuff. But you have no idea who built it. Because it's a commodity. Even not just beans and rice and all that are commodities, nuts and bolts, but homes, podcasts to some extent, all of this stuff is a commodity in so much that I don't know who did that. But what I do know is the experience I have with that thing. And so the experience that comes out of that is the process that's in there. And so we say this, your product is not your product. Your process is your product. That's what people are experiencing, is the process around that. And so as things become more commodified and more similar, what we've got to begin doing is distinguishing through repetitive process. Because if you bring me, let's say you're a hotel, or your podcast, this is a great example, Doug, for what you've done on your podcast. I've never experienced this process with your podcast. And yet my hunch is this experience for everybody is the same for the most part. But you're what makes it unique because of the relational aspect of it. So you've taken away all the frustration of everything that could get in the way of the relationship between you and I and the conversation that we're having right now. But the moment we allow all of those other commodified things to just, let's just hope for the best, Well, then all of a sudden that's going to really begin to break down the human and the humanity of whatever relational aspect needs to take place.
Okay, I can see where you're going there. I mean, and I like to make I like to make big hyperbolic statements, but the truth of the matter is that even if you're forging new frontiers, you do have to get things down into a repeatable process because that's how you operationally execute. And any strategy that you can't execute is just a wish, not a strategy.
That's
So
right.
I'm calling BS on myself a little bit, but I like to make big statements for the sake of contrast.
We will say this, Michael Gerber, going back to the E-Myth, and he's not definitive. There's plenty in the book. I'm like, I don't know. Even in my own book, you'd read my book or so, whoever's book and go, yeah, there's elements in there. Actually, there's a whole section of my book because it was written like 5 years ago. We don't even use anymore. And so as we gain more information, we start to learn things. And in the audio version of it, at the end, I'm like, hey, by the way, everything I just read in that last chapter, we don't use it anymore. We've moved beyond that and identified that. But Gerber has this in the book. He says this. I think it's in the book. He says, if you don't write it down, you don't own it. And we've adapted that, and we say it this way: if you don't write it down, it doesn't exist. And so, if there's not a captured version of that, and yet you want to ensure that, I remember Bill Walsh, the old great football coach. He actually not only did everything as it relates to direct football operations, but he actually wrote the script that the receptionist would use to answer the phone at the 49ers operation, and train them personally on that. And so you look at that and you're like, okay, I get the value of that. Now they still have to be human beings to be able to do it.
Well, and so it's funny you mentioned that because I'm a longtime San Francisco 49ers fan, and I think I have a cut right up here. I have a copy of The Score Takes Care of Itself.
Yes, that's the book.
That's probably my favorite Bill Walsh book.
Yeah, that's the one.
But well, because of course, at the time of this recording, the 49ers are getting ready to play the Kansas City Chiefs in the upcoming Super Bowl. And so, of course, people are talking about Kyle Shanahan. It's like, well, Kyle Shanahan is doing stuff that he learned from his dad, that his dad learned from Bill Walsh. Well,
That's right.
that his dad learned from Mike Holmgren, that Mike Holmgren learned from Bill
Bill
Walsh.
Walsh, all the way down. Yeah, it's
Yeah,
amazing.
and Bill Walsh developed that because he was in Cincinnati and they had a quarterback who couldn't throw the ball more than about 20 yards past scrimmage. But
Yeah, yeah.
if he was within 10 yards of scrimmage, he could basically hit it on the he could hit it on Abraham Lincoln's eye and a penny.
Yeah,
So
yeah, yeah. You know, well, I live in South Carolina. I'm a South Carolina Gamecock, which some days, many days, is unfortunate. But our biggest rival is are the Clemson Tigers, and they've got this coach. Time of our recording, his name's Dabo Swinney, and I'm programmed not to like him, and yet he's been wildly successful. The thing that I respect about Dabo Swinney is it was said he was brought in as an interim because they fired their coach mid-season. He's brought in as an interim, and when he came in, he was already prepared with a book, with a notebook. And this notebook was everything he had prepared for the years leading up as to if ever he got this opportunity, this was the program. Literally, it was written down. And every single year, our old head coach, when he got fired from our team, went up there and coached for him for a long, long time. And he told us that every single year, Coach Sweeney would sit down with the entire staff. Everybody would have their copy of that book, and he would open it back up and go from page one all the way through. And so again, it's this repetition of process over time to allow you to be a human being in the moment. So if we can take all other distractions away where you don't have to think, I can allow you to be a human being in the moment and really extract the most out of you and the talent that you have as a human.
Well, and I really like this because I think, if we take this a level deeper, one of the things that Bill Walsh really pioneered that a lot of people do that you're describing, your game plan is, in a lot of cases, what would happen is your first, say, your first offensive series would basically be fully scripted with if-then decision trees. And then what would happen is there would be a set of about 5 to 10 scripted practice plays for every single potential situation. So in other words, it's like, if it's the third quarter, you're down by 2 scores and you're backed up. There's a set of plays for that. If there's if it's the fourth quarter, you're up by 10 points and there's 9 minutes left on the clock. There's a set of plays for that. I mean, of course, I can start to understand why he basically had a nervous breakdown every offseason. It's because the amount of stress involved with being that
Each
with
week.
planning that meticulously, you it can't not take a toll on you.
So I've actually got a real-time scenario around that. We just brought in a brand new coach for our team, started this past Monday. You and I are talking on a Friday. So 5 days ago, our new coach was brought in. And these are high level experienced people who expect a lot when they come into an organization. And so we've built that. And Thomas, who's our director of coaching, he handles all that from sort of front to back and starts with them months in advance during the recruiting, the hiring, and now the onboarding stage. And we have an onboarding script that's 3 weeks long. It's day one, hour one, day one, hour two, day one, hour three. And so for this entire week, our new coach's days and evenings were already scripted before he got here. And so the moment he got here, all Thomas had to do was follow the script. All our new coach had to do was follow the script. And all the team had to do was follow the script. It took all the babysitting out of the way. And we actually got a message just a little bit ago before I got on this with you. And our new coach was going through our internal, we've got a Slack channel, and he was just expressing to the entire team, this is really unbelievable. And it also sets the tone for him as a coach to go, hey, this is what's expected as you come in and as you're delivering value to the people you're going to be working with.
That's excellent. So, okay, now I'd like to get to the question behind the question, which is that the end product sounds amazing. So let's say that we're going to go from nothing's written down to there is a complete script for every conceivable situation. Now, in ancient South Park episode, this is the question mark in the middle of the Underpants Gnomes episode, which is where you have collect underpants, step two, and then profit. And so what's step two?
What's step two? That's good. By the way, I'm super impressed by your diversity of examples between Bill Walsh, SpongeBob, and you're wearing a Mickey Mouse t-shirt. I think it's brilliant. Just so you know, I've actually got a t-shirt on that says smooth like butter, so I can do dad jokes too. My kids got this shirt for me. All right, so what's the in between? I do have to start here. Everything must start with vision. And vision is not a Peter Drucker idea. It's not a Jim Collins idea. This is not modernity. This goes back, as I mentioned earlier, centuries of this idea of laying down vision. There's actually a statement written or recorded about 3,000, 3,500 years ago, and it says this: write the vision down so that those who read it may run. Write the vision down so that those who read it may run. Let's go back to our Gerber statement. If you don't write it down, it doesn't exist. So the first thing that owners really need to do is sit down for an uncomfortable 30 minutes or an hour and tell the rest of us, where's this ship going? Like, where are you steering this thing? Because if you don't have clarity on that, then guess who else doesn't have clarity? Me as the employee, me as the customer, me as the partner or the vendor. And so I'm not going to hitch my trailer to yours if I have no idea where your car is going. And so we've got to sit down and do that. There's a whole thing for that. If you want later on, I'll give you a little extension. I think we've got some online with seven categories that walk you through that. So once you've got that, let's assume that the vision has been articulated. This is not a sentence and not a paragraph. This is multi-page detailed, taking us through your financials, your team, your clients, your culture, your structure, and then what you want to do personally. And so let's say all that's written. The second step of your SpongeBob example, the easiest thing to do is to set out what we call a master process roadmap. It's really simple. You can write it out on a sheet of paper. And so four boxes at the top, four vertical columns. Column number one, and all four of these verticals are the four major systems of every business, from Disney World to the ice cream shop down the street to somebody selling sport coats and bicycles. Every business has four major systems, number one, and in this order: marketing. Marketing tells the world, hey, we're here, we're here, we're here. Sales, which is the second system, that's where we take the relationships that were built through marketing and we walk down the aisle with them. We get married, right? We join together. The operations, the third major vertical, is where we fulfill the vow that we made during sales. And then administration is where it's our household chores, changing diapers and vacuuming the rug and changing light bulbs, and we're just operating the relationship day to day. And so if you could take those four verticals, put marketing, sales, ops, and admin at the top, and sit down for another 30 minutes, uncomfortable but uninterrupted, and begin to brain dump everything that you can possibly think of in each one of those verticals, I highly recommend just picking one and starting there. So if you took the easiest one is usually administration on the right side, the fourth vertical. So if you sat there and just said, all right, what are all the administrative processes that we have? Well, we've got receivables, we got payables, invoicing, billing, payroll, insurance, HR stuff, all that stuff. And you just
SAP,
begin to
APQC, standardized business
all that.
processes.
Yes. Put all that down in the administrative function. Once you've sort of exhausted your mind around that, then go to your left to your operational function, because usually that's pretty easy as well. It's where most owners spend their time, is actually delivering the product, which we're trying to get them out of. But put down there, all right, let's say you're selling ice cream. Okay, well, we've got product ordering, we've got product fulfillment, we've got how to scoop an ice cream, how to, clean the ice cream handles, all that stuff. And you just begin to put all that down. Then you go to sales, then you go to marketing. Begin to brain dump all that. If you can just start there and get a list out, then what you can do is step two and a half, between step three of profit and SpongeBob's example, is you can begin to capture it when you do it. So we call it the systems mindset. Here's what it means. The next time you do a thing, capture it like it's the last time you'll ever do that thing. So the next time you do payroll, record it. There's such great screen share software now. Record it and record it like it's the last time you'll ever do it. The next time you build slides for a presentation, record it like it's the last time you ever do it. And so everything, you might say, well, my stuff's not on the computer. No problem. Take that $1,000 smartphone you got, turn the camera around and start videoing what you're doing. Put it on audio recording, however you can capture it. Capture it and then link it to that little sheet that you made. Obviously, you're not going to be able to do that with handwriting, but link it there. And now you've got this process roadmap that, Doug, honestly, your business is no longer what you see. Your business is that sheet of paper. If you were to take it to the market, that's what you're selling, because your process is your product.
Well, and I think there's a really important thing that you said, which we might have to schedule a follow-up because we're probably getting a little close on time, but it's that, when you're saying that that's what you're selling, because if you are looking to sell a business, you will do much better if you have a repeatable process in
That's
place.
right. That's right. Yeah. So one of the things, I'm a what they call a CEPA advisor, a certified exit planning advisor. And there's two numbers that tend to blow business owners' minds away. Number one, 80% of the value of your business, mine too, is, or excuse me, 80% of my net worth is in my business. And that's how most business owners are. The second is 80% of the value of that business, where 80% of my net worth is, 80% of the value is in what we call the intangibles. It's the stuff you can't see. It's the processes. And so if you want to know what drives an owner's business or personal net worth, it's actually go two steps back. It's the intangibles of those documented processes that they can share with others to get them to do it. Therefore, the business begins to run without them, and they're not as valuable to it, which means they're more valuable to the market.
All right. Well, I think we are at a good segue and or stopping point for today. But before I cut you off, I'd love to get last few thoughts to share with everybody, and then let everybody know where they can find out more. Your website, if you have a newsletter, just let us know what we can do. And of course, we'll make sure to put a link in the show notes as well.
Yeah, Doug, thank you. There's an old Thomas Edison quote. It says this, or is it an adaptation of it? Vision without implementation is hallucination. Vision without implementation is hallucination. So you could sit here and listen to Scott and Doug chit chat back and forth, and then turn the podcast off, and you just kind of go about your day and don't do anything else. That's hallucination. That's all we're doing. We're just sort of being puffed up with knowledge. The thing I would encourage is take one of those things that we talked about. Go sit down for an uncomfortable 30 minutes, no distractions, turn your phones off, turn everything off, and just get out a sheet of paper and start to brain dump some of those things that are there. So that's the only thing that I would encourage people to do from an implementation standpoint. In terms of getting in touch with whatever we've got, easiest way to do it is to take action. That's what we like to do, is to go to mybusinessonpurpose.com/healthy. So mybusinessonpurpose.com/healthy. And there's actually a 5 to 7 minute health assessment that you can go on there and take the assessment, and it will give you a numerical metric for the back end health of your business. It's really fun. And if you've got multiple people in your business, especially key leaders, let them take it too. And you can start to compare numbers, because sometimes we're a little bit more emotionally inclined to think that our baby is a lot prettier than it actually is. And so it's helpful to have people outside of that.
Got it. Got it. Well, Scott, really appreciate your time today.
Yeah, Doug. Hey, thanks for put this is hard work, the podcast you're doing. And so I'm grateful you'd share the stage. So thank
Well,
you.
I like to think of it as a labor of love. All
It
right.
is.
Talk to you later, Scott.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for listening to the People First Leaders podcast. If you are a successful People First founder or CEO who would like to be on this show, please visit peoplefirstleaders.net/guest. If this interview resonated, would you please share it on social media? Just take a quick screenshot on your phone and post it on your favorite social channel. Then make sure to tag me at Doug Value so I can give you and your business a shout out on a future episode. If you know somebody who'd be a great guest, please tag them on social and include the hashtag #PeopleFirstLeaders. I really love seeing your posts and guest suggestions. We're releasing new content and episodes all the time, so make sure to hit the subscribe button so you don't miss any new episodes. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and they mean a lot to me personally. And also, I would like to connect with you on social. My handle is at Doug Value, or you can just go to peoplefirstleaders.net where all of the links are posted. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.